Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of Resounding Echoes. Yes, hello again. We are back for another installment of Classical Music Daily's latest venture. And before I get into the meat of today's program, it's quite a meaty program, I just want to clarify, in case there's anybody listening out there who's interested, some details about the written details that accompany these broadcasts. For anybody who wants or who didn't get the details from the audio, if you want the written details, you will find them on the same page as the corresponding audio, but you have to wait a week or so. For example, the first program in this series, the first imaginary concert, was broadcast on the 23rd of June. And if you go back to that page now, you will find the written details of the music that was played in that broadcast. They're all there now. They were not there when the program was broadcast because, as I said, I just want people to listen, first of all, without knowing what they're going to hear, but I will put the written details up later. But they are to be found on the same page as the, as I said, the corresponding audio. And for example, now the last week's program, when this program is put up on the 7th of July, last week's program, the written details of last week's program on the 30th of June, they should also be on the same page as that program. Okay, so I hope that's clear. So that's you just have to go back to the same audio and wait a week, maybe a little longer, depending, but we hope to get them up on the corresponding Sunday, 1 week later. All right, now today's program. So first of all, I have to say that I have finally decided on my means as to how to proceed with this series. I did contemplate, I thought it would be fun to tell the history of the universe through the classical music of the 20th century. But as I was contemplating that idea, I noticed there was smoke coming out of my ears and my eyeballs were starting to vibrate. So I thought, maybe not the best idea. So I decided finally to plumb for an idea that's within my capabilities. Well, I hope. As I said, this is I haven't got too far ahead of myself yet. I'm just going to tell the story of classical music in the 20th century in a chronological order. So I'm going to start at the beginning, what I consider the beginning, and just go through all the music that I think deserves to be in this program, which of course that means great little known or lesser known music of the 20th century, lesser known music of great composers, and maybe occasionally some well-known music, but music that I have never had the chance to hear live, because that's also the reason I started these imaginary concerts, if you remember, if you've been paying attention. So just one detail on that. When I talk about 20th century music, I have to clarify what I mean by 20th century music. I mean, it may seem fairly obvious that 20th century music is music composed within the 20th century, between 1901 and the year 2000. And for people who think like that, they are absolutely correct to do so and have every justification to do so. But I have a slightly different take, in that when I talk about 20th century music, I don't just mean the music any music written within that time frame, because 20th century music for me also implies a certain aesthetic. And so when I talk about 20th century music, I mean music that for me could only have been composed in the 20th century. And I say that because there is a lot of music composed in the 20th century, even in the 21st century, which is even worse in some ways, that for me very easily could have been composed in the 19th century or even the 18th century, because stylistically or aesthetically, there's no advance or no difference from the music of that period. So in these programs, I will only be playing or talking about music that I think is uniquely connected to the 20th century, an idea with a certain idea of modernity. I won't get into what I mean by modernity today, because that's a long discussion. Okay, so let's proceed. And I'm going to start today. Well, I'm going to start today because we're... Oh, sorry, I would just say that although I am telling a story chronologically, that doesn't mean that necessarily there's going to be music from every year. There's a good chance there may be. As I said, I haven't got too far ahead of myself yet. But particularly in the early years of the 20th century, a lot of the music was still very much tied to the 19th century mindset or aesthetic. So there may be a few years at the beginning of the century that do not feature, but we'll see when we get there. But just so happens that today's program is going to feature two pieces of music that were actually composed in the year 1901. And the first of these is one that, I think it's right on the border. It's a liminal piece of music. I could well understand some may feel that this is 19th century music, but I think there's just enough for it to deserve to be in this program. It's quite a well-known piece of music. I don't think it's too out there, but it's a piece that I have never heard live as much as I would like to. Another thing I'd say, when I tell this story, this is a quite extraordinary story, the music in the 20th century. Like any great stories, it's full of romance, mystery, fantasy, intrigue. There are heroes and villains. There's an incredible list of protagonists, some of whom you'll be meeting only once and others you'll be meeting many, many times. And I'm going to start with somebody who I think is now about to make his one and only appearance. Ich bin der Welt abhanden gekommen. Words by German poet Friedrich Ruckert, and music unmistakably composed by Gustav Mahler. And yeah, I started with that song because I think it's a good point to start with. As I said, it's a piece that's in many ways looking back and looking forward. Clearly Mahler's influences are there on that music, but there's something uniquely Mahler about that music and the music he wrote from then on. And so I think it deserved to be in there. And in that performance, you heard it sung by Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau. And I chose that piece. It's not the usual way it's heard. It's a song that's usually sung by a mezzo-soprano. But I thought, as this was a poem written by a man and music composed by a man, I thought it appropriate to have a man singing it. And I also chose this song to start with because what Ruckert is reflecting on there or talking about is something quite relevant to, to not only to music in the 20th century, but what I mean is that although Ruckert wasn't alive during the 20th century, Friedrich Ruckert was born the year before the French Revolution, and he died the same year as the Austro-Prussian War in 1866, so which ultimately was what led 5 years later to the formation of the German Empire, or German unification, pretty much the predecessor of the modern idea of Germany. But this idea, sorry, the title, for people who don't know, it basically means I am lost to the world. And yeah, I think what Ruckert is talking about there has its relevance for music in the 20th century, particularly German music, which obviously the German influence on classical music in every century is pronounced and massive. So, but it's also, and I also think it helps to get some kind of a handle on one of the biggest conundrums that many people have regarding the idea that how is it possible that a nation or a people that has produced so many extraordinary composers, poets, dramatists, philosophers, painters to a lesser extent, clearly a people with a great love of beauty, seemingly so cultured and cultivated, how is it possible at the same time the same world was capable of the Holocaust? And now there's nothing cut or dried about this. There's no black and white explanation, if there's any explanation at all. But there are, I think, genuine historical reasons that may at least go some way to explaining this phenomenon, which I know because many people do find this just impossible to get their head around that. You know, even more so to the extent that even the commanders of the concentration camps would have no problems to spend the evening listening to Schubert or reading Goethe while they did what they did during the day, or, you know. And what Ruckert is talking about here, as I said, in that song he's singing about, basically he's dead to the world. The world, as most of us know it, is just something that's he's left behind. Basically, he doesn't care what goes on in the world, and he doesn't care if people think he's dead, because he says, "I've wasted too much time in this world, in the turmoil of the world." And he says in the last verse, "I live alone in a quiet place, in my own heaven, made by my own love and my own song." And this kind of abandonment to the world that Ruckert is referring to here, it can be seen as an example of a well-documented German phenomenon, namely the fact that they gave they gave greater importance, or the many gave greater importance, that many of its citizens from the 18th century, particularly the middle class, gave to the world of the intellect, the spirit, and importantly, music, that the Germans call this whole world, the Germans refer to as Kultur, rather than to the world of the merely day-to-day, known as Zivilisation. This is the world that Ruckert has left behind. Now, there are very clear historical reasons as to why this was the case. A lot of this is due to the fact that Germany, going back a fair bit, going back to Ruckert's time and even before, it remained an absolutist state in a way quite different from many other nominally democratic countries. The middle classes did not enjoy anything like the freedoms their French or British or Dutch peers, for example, enjoyed. They lived under strict censorship. Political power in the German lands remained to a much greater degree and for far longer in the hands of the nobility, who were effectively the state. And most of the middle class were subservient state officials. You know, as someone wrote, the English and the French do the deeds, whereas here in Germany, we merely translate them. And even German Romanticism can be viewed as a means of escape for the frustrated ambitions of this middle class. You know, many of these people, you know, they saw the world of politics, the Zivilisation, you know, as the world of their enslavement, their failure, their defeat, their humiliation. And so many of them took shelter in the world of their supreme success, the world of history, philosophy, literature and music, Kultur. But this ignorance of, or indifference to, or even disdain, contempt for the political as compared to the world of the spirit to which Ruckert has lost himself, to, for many, is seen as one important reason why not enough people took the Nazis seriously enough, early enough, or even worse, why so many of this very same middle class who should have known better, idiotically took the Nazis' twisted ideology all too seriously as some kind of saviour of the sacred German spirit. Since the Reformation, theology had been the backbone of the intellectual, spiritual world in Germany. But in a secularized 20th century, too many who are starving for existential meaning mistakenly took the Third Reich as some sort of politicized version of the ultimate Christian sacrifice. And in this world of warped values, willfully distant from the day-to-day, a very clear case of the means justifies the ends was put into practice based on the idea that the greater the sacrifice called for, the greater its value. And everything, you know, justice, morality, law, ultimately human life became irrelevant or mere obstacles to be overcome for the sake of this sacrifice. So with all of that, as I said, I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about this because I think it's important and relevant too, because it's a background for a lot of what went on in Germany right up till the end of the Second World War. And that obviously has its impact on music. And so I just wanted to talk about that. And also I chose it because in a way, that song, I Am Lost to the World, it could serve as a theme tune for all the music I'm going to play here, because also, yes, when I listen to all this music, I am lost to the world in a certain sense. You know, I go to another world, but I want to be very clear about this. I'm not talking about the same thing as Ruckert. You know, the music I intend to showcase here is a gateway for me into reality, not an escape from it. But when I talk about reality, I am talking about something different from what I feel many understand as the real world, at least as far as I see it anyway. You know, what many refer to as the real world seems to me more like a deliberate avoidance of reality, a deliberate avoidance of real engagement, a willful escape from reality in all its fascinating, stimulating messiness, complexity, strangeness, and uncertainty. Reality, as understood by many people, seems to me despairingly superficial, provincial, insipid, and narcissistic. You know, from the way people relate to or don't relate to each other in their personal lives, to the way they refuse to engage as thinking, reflective, responsibly informed adults with politics, history, science, the natural world, the wider human family or the world of ideas, a reality that doesn't seem to want to stray far from the comfortable Sodom and Gomorrah of social media and TV shows, where what's happening in Ukraine or Gaza is only real as long as it takes to change the channel or scroll past the image, where climate change is happening somewhere else and is unrelated to how I choose to live my life, or any of us choose to live our lives. A reality in which people have not realized that when you live on a globe, there is no somewhere else. Where people seem to reserve their real engagement for their pets, and maybe due to the crazily exaggerated importance they give to sport, or because they spend so much time looking at a screen of one sort or another, many seem to prefer to experience reality as a spectator on the sidelines, celebrating others' goals rather than as players scoring their own. So that's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm talking about. For me, that's not my idea of reality. When I listen to this music, I go to what I consider a real world. And I also want to stress the point that this music, it's not some form of consolation for me, some soothing balm to the soul. I've always found that idea quite disgusting and self-obsessed. I've never looked for consolation in music, in anything, I don't think, but that's for another day. You know, this music offers a full engagement reality for me, you know, visceral, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, complete engagement. Reality in all its guises is both beautiful and horrible, and a lot of it is horrible. It doesn't shy away from stories that deserve or need to be told just because they may be unpalatable or disturbing. It doesn't limit itself to entertainment or the need to please, especially if the truth is not pleasant. And just because the truth is not pleasant doesn't mean for one moment that it isn't true. You know, the tortured have a right to scream, and a right to have their screams heard. Truth is beauty, as a famous young English contemporary of Rückert once wrote. And just one final point about this, about telling the truth and music. You know, the right to tell the truth, to be considered as an art form and not just as entertainment or something to make its listeners feel good, is something that music, more than any other art form, has struggled and is still struggling to have recognized and accepted, as far as I'm concerned. You know, people may or may not like modern art or architecture or sculpture or even literature, but they accept to a greater or lesser degree its right to be different from corresponding art forms of the past as an aspect of how it reflects the modern world, a world clearly different, whether negatively or positively, from the past in so many ways. The right to be abstract, complex, uncertain, disconcerting, to not conform to expectations, to be critical, even confrontational, these are all rights denied to music by many listeners in a way that they are not denied, or at least not to the same extent, in my opinion, to other art forms. Now, why this is, or why I feel this is the case, is a subject I broached in a piece I wrote last spring, I think, called Rough Winds Do Shake, another famous English poet. So I won't get into it now, but I'll leave that there. But this is, you know, the music some of the music I play here will generate various digressions, and when I think they're interesting, I will digress, because this is my program, and I'm sorry, that's the way it is. Okay, so with that, I think it's about time for some more music. Yeah, so let's have our second piece for today. Now, after my Sunday sermon, I decided to play a piece there also, which has a connection, slight connection with a church. That's a piece called From the Steeples and the Mountains, written, believe it or not, in 1901 by a certain Mr., by a young man from New England called Charles Edward Ives. Now, the first piece I played, the Ich bin der Welt verwandten gekommen, you know, was from the heart of European classical music. You know, Gustav Mahler was Bohemian born and based for most of his life in Vienna. But Ives was from another universe, literally. You know, Ives was, as I said, a New Englander. His father was a band leader in the American Civil War. He grew up in New England. When he wrote that piece, he would have been in his mid-20s. He was just out of Yale. He was where he was as well known for his sporting abilities as for anything else. And at the time, he wasn't working as a composer or a musician or any kind of sort. He was working as an actuary in an insurance company in New York. And music was at that time more or less, I mean, obviously it was a passion, but it was basically something he did in his free time at the weekends. And he was able to come up with a piece like that. Now, it's a piece that's extraordinary on so many levels. I don't want to get too much into the music when I talk about these programs. Some details help, but I want to try to keep it pretty accessible to anybody who doesn't have a musical knowledge. But just a few points about that piece. As I said, its date is, and it's still staggering to me. But it, first of all, the instrumentation, it's a piece written for bells and brass. And I can't think of a similar piece for a similar group of instruments. It includes four sets of bells in three different keys. So here we already have an example of what's known as polytonality, which just means music in different keys, but different simultaneous keys, three different keys being played at the same time. Now, for anybody who was studying music at the time, and probably still today, something like that was just anathema. You know, the whole point of key tonality is that if you write a piece in a certain key, you stay in that key. I mean, you can go to other keys as long as they are related to the original key. But playing different keys simultaneously became one of the hallmarks of 20th century music, or some 20th century music. But here's Ives doing it already in the first year of the 20th century. And as I said, completely, well, as I said, Mahler was right at the heart of the classical music, European classical music tradition. Ives was You know, Ives was literally in the desert in so many ways, and he's just doing this completely on his own. It's, as I said, when the more you think about it, the more extraordinary it gets. But not only the bells, the brass melodies are basically completely atonal. They're not in any key at all. They're just completely free. So again, atonality, music or melodies or chords, harmonies made in a way that are not based on a key. This is also seen as another hallmark of modern music, 20th century music. And again, here's Ives doing it before anybody, seemingly. Even the notes that he writes here, the length of the notes, they're systematically organized in that they get gradually shorter and longer, but in a mathematical proportional way, in a very systematic. And again, this is, in some ways you could argue this is half a century ahead of his time. This idea of using different systems when you talk about meter or rhythm. There's also different bars of the score are played in a way that's almost like a mirror. I won't get into it too much now, but again, it's all of these, there's all so many, just so novel things going on here in one short piece. I mean, this thing lasts, you only heard a fragment there, but it's only 3-4 minutes depending on the who plays it, but it's typically 4 minutes or so. And all of this, everything I've been talking about here, it's all in there. And also he has the brass, the melodies are in canons at strange intervals, minor thirds, major thirds, fifths. So that's just listen to that piece and be amazed. So I'll leave that there. I think we've had enough for today. And after what I've just said about Ives and his extraordinary music, don't be surprised if you will be hearing a lot more from Mr. Charles Ives. But as I said, I don't think we'll be encountering Gustav Mahler more. A pity in some way, but Mahler is everything by Mahler is very, very, very well known today. Not so long ago, that was not the case at all. But today, yes. So Mahler doesn't need my help to be known. Okay, so I think that's enough for today. So as I said, thanks for listening. I hope you took something from that. And remember, keep tuning in for those resounding echoes.